I admire the input. I appreciate it and respect it. And I am beholden to it. So let's get to it. Hello, everybody. And welcome to a very special episode of the Indie Book Club. My name is Graydon. I am joined today by the wonderful Alan Muir. How are you doing on this fine, when's this going up? Christmas Eve?
The eve of Christmas, the eve to Christmas Eve. So the 23rd.
The eve to Christmas Eve. That sounds good. Yeah, so we are, this is a little special episode. It was going to be just an episode, but we delayed it a couple times. I've been under the weather lately. Still kind of am. Apologies for that. However, we have, we're going to make it a special thing for our 12 days of VGU, which you are hopefully keeping up with currently. What would this be in the middle of it?
This is technically like middle, early slash middle.
Okay. And we've got some special writing things going up, some special videos, some special podcasts. So, definitely keep
the
up date, with
the night after this next after this on the YouTube channel. Josh has a video going up.
Oh yeah,
the Parasite Eve.
Yeah, that's gonna be very cool because I know like nothing about Parasite Eve, but I'm excited to just see Josh talk about it because, I mean, one, when Josh gets passionate about things, it's fun to listen to him talk.
Yeah, because you know that some knowledge is going to get dropped.
Oh, yeah. And also, like, he's just, he loves Parasite Eve, so it's a good way to learn about that series. So we are here today to talk about a game that, I mean, we... A little behind the scenes magic. We both played it like a week ago, but this is Benjamin's Flight, which is the DLC for Thomas Was Alone. I should have been a bit more prepared in when it was released in comparison to the main game. Let me get a little look in here. Thomas Was Alone, which we have been talking about for the past couple of weeks. Please listen to those episodes if you have not yet. It was released in, well, we know it was a Flash game in October 2010. It was released in July 2012. And then if I go to reception, I wonder if it talks about it there. Nope. Gameplay, plot, development. Ooh, development looks like it could be good. All right. Additional content for the PlayStation release was made available for free for owners of the Windows and other versions on June 26, 2014. And then the game was released on all the other platforms on November 2014. So, seems like it was 2 years later we got Benjamin's Flight. We stated last time that you played this on PC because it was free, as I just said, with the game, which is pretty cool. I continued playing it on PlayStation. I had to pay, I think it was $3 for the DLC, but that's fine. And, yeah, I mean, what was your overall thoughts on it right from the get?
There were certain things I didn't quite understand that I don't know if there was just some storytelling errors, like things that were just threads that were dropped.
Like compared to the main game or within the DLC story?
So, because I'd played this about a week or two after finishing the main, like after finishing the second half of the game, I didn't realize, I forgot that about Sarah's character.
Okay.
I totally forgot about her character, and that I thought something familiar about it, but then just out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah, I mean, I think she was your favorite.
Yeah,
in the base game.
Yeah, because I thought, wait, this this, I was just, when I was playing, I was like, something seems familiar about this. And it was basically Sarah's, like, the way Sarah traverses the environment. I was very angry with this because of and you even said it yourself, when you said, when you compared it to a challenge mode.
Yeah.
And I was like, what, I wonder what he means by that. And I'm like, I'm ready to crush my, like, break my controller.
Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, that kind of goes, I'll jump into the first note that I had before we take it to the synopsis, because, I mean, this episode will probably be a bit shorter than what we're used to. This whole DLC is shorter than what we're used to, because it was only two levels, two chapters, 10 levels each, and they all felt a bit longer to me, I feel, and maybe that was because of the challenge that they posed, but I felt like each level had a bit more focus on the story and had those bits where, like, I mean, to compare it to the base game, Thomas Was Alone has a lot of sick levels where it starts off with narration and then it's just ambient music for the rest of it. But this one had a lot of, like, we're going to cut in with the narration throughout the level because we've got a big story to tell in the span of only 20 levels. And I think that helped with the fact that the level was so challenging. I can't imagine what it would have been like if you had to keep restarting the narration every time you died. But yeah, so, I mean, yes, I had said to you right off the bat, this may be your challenge mode that you were looking for. But of course, we were hoping for this big cast of characters that you could mess around in challenges with. And that's not really what you get in here.
Mainly three characters.
Yeah, there's mainly three characters. We have Benjamin, who is a green square that can, well, he's a rectangle, I guess, that can fly. After a couple of levels, he's given essentially a jetpack, and he has the ability.
No, he steals it.
Yes, he right, exactly. He goes in and he steals the jetpack, and he is granted the ability to fly. And we have Sarah again, who double jumps, as we know. And then we have Anna, and she, God, what does she do? She bounce? Oh my God, I'm drawing a blank. Yes, I think she's one of the bounce ones, like Laura.
Yes, she's a very, this could just be my opinion. The only two characters in this who actually get, in my opinion, like, actually feel developed are Benjamin and Sarah mainly because our player has more knowledge of Sarah from the main game, and Benjamin is obviously the title character, but Benjamin's father and Anna just throwaway characters.
And is that what you kind of meant about, like, not in really plot holes, but just kind of dropping the plot in certain places?
Yeah, so there's a few levels, like, once Benjamin gets the jetpack, Benjamin's father's gone from the story. And then at a certain point, Anna is, she decides to just exit the story.
Right.
And actually, Anna's fate is pretty, like dark.
Yeah. Yeah, because she's never, like, mentioned, I mean, as you said, this is kind of a prequel. Well, it is a prequel to the main game, and it's she's never mentioned in the original, and the way that this, we're kind of, yeah, go ahead.
This is more of a prequel to like, obviously for the game, but more a prequel for Sarah than Benjamin.
Yeah, and I had it written down that, like, they, along with Sarah there's in the kind of opening cutscene, as I call it, to the second chapter of this DLC, there's a little reference to Thomas, but other than that, there's nothing that really draws it back to the game. So really, this is kind of like, if you want more of this platforming, if you want more of a challenge, and you want to see more of Sarah's story, because really it could have been anyone's story. I mean, personally, I would have liked to see, I don't know, like Claire, how she got to the top of that thing she was falling from when we meet her. Like, any one of the other characters could have had a unique, like, how did they get where they were when we first met them? But for some reason, they thought, let's set up Sarah. And I think my disappointment, as I'll get to as the story goes on, is it doesn't really connect story-wise to how she is in the main game. I did see some, like when I was looking at going back and looking at Let's Plays to get some questions and stuff, I saw YouTube comments being like, oh, this really like proves why Sarah is the way she is. And I don't see it personally. But yeah, I mean, let's jump into the first chapter here and we'll just take a look at the synopsis and talk about it a bit.
For as many cycles as he could remember, Benjamin had made the climb with his father. Every time, the glow felt closer, more tangible. Benjamin hoped that one day, he'd be able to reach out and touch it.
So we have the first chapter called Target. Every year, Benjamin and his father try to make the trek to the fountain. Many cycles after the first level, his father builds him a jetpack, and he's excited to use it to fly to the fountain. Benjamin goes ahead against his father's wishes, and this is where like he breaks into some kind of locker and steals the steals the jetpack. I'm not entirely sure. He steals the jetpack. He goes ahead. Anna appears, and she thinks she can make it to the fountain alone, but she's seen by Benjamin, and they have to team up. Benjamin intends to make this a quick trip, which I felt was a little like they talk about it for a level or two of like, oh, this is going to be a piece of cake. And that's like some foreshadowing of things not going well. Benjamin and Anna meet up and travel to the fountain together. Eventually, he realizes his father must be missing him. Anna tries to convince him there's too much stopping them. So this is when she starts getting to be like, you know, wary of the journey. She's like, there's just not enough going on. There's just too much there. I think she mentions the pixel clouds, or as I had written down, he's not afraid of clouds no matter how pixelated they are. So like, she's obviously told him stories of the fountain and things that can stop them, and he remains cocky and reckless, and they carry on their journey. So that's a chapter. You meet Anna. I did look her up. She's not even a bouncy platform. She's just a horizontal rectangle that you kind of just carry around for most of the game, but she makes for an interesting challenge because you're doing a lot of flying around and trying to navigate tight spaces with a long sideways block that doesn't fit into everything. There's a lot of puzzles and where you kind of leave her on a ledge and stuff. Yeah, go ahead.
You can make the case, like the argument, that that's Anna's, like, that's her role, like, for Benjamin. Like, he's going there. Like, he wants to go to the Fountain of Wisdom. And then Anna is, she wants to go, but she's unsure, like, she's, or not unsure. She's like, as things start getting more and more, like as things move along, you get the feeling that like her being the shape she is and it being a challenge maybe represents the fact that she isn't really you know, the right fit, so to speak. No pun intended, by the way. No pun intended.
I mean, I think you could also say, and maybe this is what you were trying to say, but she, in having to like carry her around and do a lot of like puzzles where you kind of leave her in one spot, go around and do your thing, and then meet up with her again, it kind of
shows. She doesn't add much?
Yeah, she doesn't add much, and it kind of shows that whole like she'll come with you, but she's not
really contributing much.
Yeah, her heart's not in it. She doesn't really have this grand journey that she's on, because it's not as much about her. She's just kind of bringing up the rear the whole time, and you're the one really going for it. One of the levels in particular that I did want to talk about was that one that's just walls of spikes everywhere. And I wish I could remember what it was. I have... Oh, yeah. How about that spike level? 10.4.
Which one? Okay, I was about to say. Like, which one? There were a lot of levels of spikes.
10.4. I mean, if you look up... I'll attach it to the video, but... yeah, if you look up Benjamin's Flight, there's like a video right at the top, and 10.4, it's about 4 minutes in, and it's just a mess. It's so many spikes all over the place. You have to do this little thing where you're just like, you're just doing these leaps of faith into spikes and hoping that you can catch it in time. But like we said with the base game, the jumps are pretty floaty in Thomas Was Alone lore, and it's not super easy.
Can I tell you how I was playing the actual, like, how I was playing this level?
Please do.
Like, you know how there are certain games that, like, from the early, like, the early days of video games, where, like, you would, or actually it wasn't even that. I was having Benjamin... Like, I was, like, having him, like, just constantly tapping A, like, the A button, rather than, like, just full-on pressing and holding it.
Okay.
So I was treating him like he was, I was using the jetpack as if it were a, like, an early, like, an early, flight.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, that was a pretty, like, well, I did die a lot. I really liked that whole aesthetic.
Yeah, so, like, right, like, from the start, you kind of got the hang of it pretty easily?
Yeah. That's like, cool. Well, there are certain ones that were...
a challenge.
Yeah, that'd be an understatement.
It kind of reminds me, what's that old, it's not Missile Command. There's a game where you're constantly going, it's a side scroller, and you're dropping bombs on, like, things shooting up at you from the ground, but you have to, like, tap your flight, or you'll go too far or low. Do you remember this? It's like an Atari game.
You mean Asteroids?
No, not Astro. Asteroids, you stay in one place, or you move around the main screen. But this one, it's like, oh man, it's constantly scrolling. Is it moon? You're playing as like a moon lander, and you got
Moon Patrol.
Is it Moon Patrol? You got to kind of hover as you're going side to side.
Yeah, there's you're shooting. You have a turret that shoots up, and you're getting chased by UFOs. You have to make jumps over various, various, like, enemies.
Sadly, this doesn't look like it. I want to find it so I can.
There's an Atari 2600 version. Which looks very much like...
I have found the game.
Combat?
It's called Lunar Lander.
Yes, Lunar Lander.
And it's exactly that kind of mechanic. Where you're just like, up, apply a little more juice. And so imagine that in that spiky hallway.
It was fun.
It is. It's really, it's crazy to look back on such minimalistic games like that and see what's been inspired by it and realize that it was still fun. Like, freaking Pong is still fun in the proper context of wanting to play it.
Oh, and just a thing for the listeners. Lunar Lander was a game that came out the same year as Alien. So.
Oh, wow.
It's 1979.
Well, we were more advanced in certain fields than others.
Man.
What's that?
No, man, that was a trip. Going back to Lunar Lander. That was a deep cut.
I think I had it on my e-reader. Like it was either an e-reader thing or just one of those like Atari collection things. But I definitely played it on a Game Boy for a while, and it.
There is a Lunar Lander Beyond that is being worked on.
Oh, because they're remaking a bunch of Atari games.
Yeah, Dreams Unincorporated are making it.
Dreams Unincorporated.
Yeah,
James Incorporated. Oh, the makers of Chris Tales.
Okay, let's back to the.
This was a fun detour.
Every time I saw spikes, every time I saw anything close to spikes, I got angry.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely not for someone that like you said, I don't think either of us are break your controller type people, but
I may have thrown a controller once in all my years of gaming. But
do you remember what it was that drove you to that?
I think it was maybe an original Xbox game.
Okay.
But I don't I'm not sure if it was, cuz the stuff I was into when I was around that platform was stuff like Star Wars Obi-Wan.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you'd think that playing Dark Souls and all that, and Sekiro, that I'd get very angry with those games. But it was not the case.
Yeah. Well, I will say, to out myself, I think your beloved Revenge of the Sith Game Boy Advance game drove me to break two Game Boy Advance SPs.
Mm-hmm.
I snapped those things in half. This was in the time when they were abundant. Like, I was a kid with them, but My SpongeBob one that I have now is not my original. I think I had a red and then I had a blue. And I think I might have had one that I lost too. But like, I totally snapped two of them because they were.
Can I admit something that I've never admitted on air to anyone?
Oh, damn. Yeah, a revelation for Christmas.
And it has to do, it's going to make people very angry and like really hate me.
No, go for it.
This should have been a very clear sign to my parents that I'm autistic, like on the spectrum, because my parents would, or my dad would give me money, like try to make it up to me through that, and I would tear up the money.
Really?
I must have torn up the equivalent of maybe $500 and $1,000.
No. You say make it up to you, like make what up to you? Like they were like mean to you or something?
So, if my dad was unable to, like, if there was something that he promised me that we were going to do, and something happened with work and he had to miss it, I'd have a full-on meltdown, like, autistic meltdown.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd be given money as, I had no idea about the concept of money, so I would just literally tear up the money into pieces.
Wow.
And
that, though, like, yeah, a kid doesn't understand. That's why, like, chores never really meant anything to me, because I was like, what's money?
Every time my parents bring it up, I just say, hey, that should have been a sign. Oh, that should have been an idea, or like, that should have put an idea in your head. Say, hey, let's get our kid tested for neurological disorders.
And they're like, it was a different world. Nobody knew these things, Alan. Don't hold it against us.
No, I'm actually the one who realizes the folly of my actions.
Well, I'm glad that you've come to your senses there and realized I could have been like $1,000 richer.
Yeah, but let's talk about
someone else who's learned about their folly, Benjamin. 10.5.
Yes, the level that almost made me, which was the closest one that made me think, how can I get around this whole thing and just, like, how can I just try to fake my way to, like, just say, hey, this was the most trouble, like, the most difficult level in the entire game.
Really?
Or in the entire Benjamin's Flight.
I'm looking at it and thinking that it was a fun one, because it's pretty much just one of those Downwell-esque, like, falling levels.
It was mainly due to the opening of, like, the opening. I just didn't understand.
Oh.
I thought, like, I didn't understand that you had, like, that you had to go from, like, the way the traversal in that opening part.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought, wait, am I supposed to somehow get from the fourth block to the left.
You were falling, weren't you? Right, like you weren't making that jump. You thought you had to go through the spikes.
Yeah, and ironically, the one right after that.
Yeah.
Actually, that I kind of enjoyed that one.
Oh, the level after it.
10.6.
Yeah, that's the one with like the doors opening, and then there were some spike ones. This is kind of like Lunar Lander-esque to me, because you gotta like really hold it. Like, oh, you can't, you gotta just kind of hover, find a way to hover. And I mean, you have that in other games too, but it's just like, it's all about that learning, whether you're using a what is that, the mouse or a space bar for you?
I think it's space bar.
Okay, so yeah, either space bar, or for me it was just X. Really learning how to be, what's the word, conservative with that button.
She told Benjamin about the blinding light of the fountain, of the clouds which had defended it. She begged him not to carry on. He laughed it off. He wasn't afraid of clouds, so however pixelated they were, he could fly above them or swoop to avoid them. He scared.
But even going forward, like, I was going to mention 10.8, which is the one that has, like, it's like Flappy Bird, but they're moving spikes.
Oh, yeah.
And you have to carry Anna through it all. It's just like, these levels hate you. They do not care how hard it is.
Yeah, because there's that common trope about people who write about video games. Say, like, that, I think it was... there was a writer who, I'm not going to say his name, but he compared Cuphead to Dark Souls.
Yes, that infamous thing.
Which, nothing against, like, there's no reason that he should have been treated the way he did. There were a lot of levels in these two chapters that made me think, maybe this game isn't a Souls-like. Maybe this just is just a Souls-like masquerading as a puzzle game. Why do you hate me, Mike Bethel?
I mean, Cuphead would also be a Souls-like platformer. These are a new genre we invented.
But yeah, 10.8 is also another one that I didn't really get the I didn't get it first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that can be the worst with Thomas Was Alone in general. Like, if you don't get the layout of the level, like, I enjoy the way that every level opens with showing you the end and then panning the camera to the beginning, so you can kind of get a layout. But even then, like, if you don't know where to start, you're just going to mess yourself up over and over again. And in this one where there's, I mean, when we talked about the main game, it wasn't until like chapter 6 or 7 that we really started getting those, you can fail these levels. And Benjamin is right out the gate, like, hey, you're going to need those checkpoints. And that can be challenging. Like I said, these are the most challenging levels in Thomas Was Alone, but they're not the challenge mode that we were really talking about.
Yeah, it was interesting to have the, 10.10, for example, to have the parts, like the areas where you'd have to try to land, Benjamin and Anna on a very limited area, like on a very limited or a very tight space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with the water there.
Yeah, and then 11, the first 11.1, which sees a the return or the introduction proper. When did you say?
Yeah, yeah.
Of Sarah, and looking back on it, it reminds me why I like her character so much, because like just gives off the enthusiastic, like ready to do this attitude, because of how quick and high she can jump.
Yeah, no, she definitely fits that power by being just like, let's go, go, go. And I mean, they do say that in the narrative sometimes, kind of like John from the base game, where he can do this in just a couple of bounds because he can jump so far, but he'll stay back to be with the group. And she's a similar way, like, oh, I can do it. Especially when we meet her in the base game. She's just like, oh, why do these guys need to help each other? Like, I can just make it to the end. But
yeah, it gives the place, like the place, like the way that each again, it gives you a sense of understanding how each of the shapes can just simply have their own personality based on how they move around the environment.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely gives a lot of personality to these shapes. Like, I think you've said,
yeah,
like in each episode we're
talking about shapes. These are just, this is not a new thing. This is a very simple concept.
But it's a testament to the writers there's more people, but you know, anybody who worked on this game, it is a testament to what they were trying to do. they made a brilliant concept that has withstood the test of time. So let's go on to chapter 2, I guess it's technically chapter 12, 11, called Consequence. Now, I did want to mention one of the lines that I loved in that first cutscene, as I call it, of chapter 10 was, quote, "We were shocked when one amongst thousands developed a powerful trait, hope." And I thought that was a really beautiful way to just sum up what this DLC is all about. And then to go to this chapter 11's cutscene, so to speak. The network connection was the biggest security loophole we left in the system. Eventually, Thomas would use it to achieve sentience. In the early cycles, it was the downfall of many of our most promising AIs. So, that's kind of interesting. I think the network connection. Do you think that means like
the splitters?
It could be the splitters. It could be them being able to talk to each other, like, was their downfall. Because Thomas would use it to achieve sentience. But then in the early cycles, meaning this DLC, it was the downfall of many of our most promising AIs. Or that network connection could mean getting to the fountain. Like getting to that, achieving sentience. Because in the first game, the base game.
Yeah, in the base game.
Thomas makes it to this fountain, sees those cat videos of Nathan Fillion, and learns, hey, we can sacrifice ourselves, basically, by jumping into the creation matrix, and we can save all the AI. And that creates the splitters. So Thomas makes it out of the fountain. We'll find out what happens to Benjamin, but I think that what this means is the network connection in question is the fountain, and it was the biggest security loophole we left in the system. Eventually, Thomas would use it to achieve sentience, as he does, and in the early cycles, it's the downfall of, I mean, Benjamin and subsequently Sarah. But yeah, so jumping into consequence. Sarah's back. She thinks Benjamin is cool. They join up with Anna. Benjamin takes a liking to Anna because she... Wait, not Anna. Sarah. Sorry. Benjamin takes a liking to Sarah because she believes... because she believes in him. He calls her a fangirl and Anna a naysayer. Sarah thinks of herself as a faithful disciple to Benjamin. Only Anna sees that he's getting kind of mad with power. She locks herself away and gives up on adventure.
Yeah, that, like, that particular level, 11.4, saying, like, she locks herself away, or she locks herself off from everyone, and just, like, that's it. You think, oh, okay, then she just, like, just solo life. Like, no, she goes into a closed, like a enclosure. Like enclosed, like
little box in the wall.
Yeah, and just, and that's her exit from the story. And yeah, yeah, for the next, like after that, like 11.5, 11.6, 11.7, 11.8. It's just after that, it's just Benjamin and Sarah.
But yeah, no, it's like she's quite literally giving up. She gives up the adventure. She kind of gives up on life, locks herself away. Who knows what happens to her? Like I said, she's not in the base game. So she just kind of is. And I wrote this down near like the end, but I kind of would have liked if Anna, Sarah's character was Lara instead, or even if Anna was Lara. Simply because when we meet Lara in Thomas Was Alone, she knows about the Pixel Cloud. And I just feel like there was more, I wish there was more of an explanation there on why she knows about this. And obviously Anna is a character that she's hesitant about going to the fountain. She knows that there's ominous things there that will hold them back. And I think if they made her Lara, I mean, A, it wouldn't have been as dark. B, we could have set up like how we find her in the main game, and it just would have gone a bit better with the story. It feels there are certain times where Benjamin's fight feels like it wasn't written with the base game in mind, and it just wanted to be its own thing, and then the connection was an afterthought, like making it a prequel. Did you get that vibe?
Yeah, very. There was a lot of vibes that the game is sold well.
Quick, make a DLC.
Yeah, let's or could even have been just something like because of how well the game has sold, let's do this to like just say, hey, we haven't forgotten you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and you can't really complain with it being like it's always been just a couple dollars. I think this is from the back in the day when, I mean, it wasn't really like Microsoft points era, but back in the day when DLCs were just a couple of bucks because they were just a couple hundred Microsoft points, like it was just a small little add-on. And I think I might have already owned this because I played it on Vita originally, and I definitely played the DLC back then. And I remember not loving it very much, but I enjoyed it this time around. But I do wish that there was more to it. It would have been cool if even this unlocked a challenge mode and was like, hey, jump back in. Or like nowadays, there would be some kind of not new game plus, but like, hey, go back and 3-star the levels or something. They would try to fit something into a game like this these days. But yeah, I mean, I guess you can't complain for how small it is. And oh, let's just give them something more. But you just kind of can't help but want a little more.
The world surrounding the fountain was brighter than the rest. Light seemed to engulf the space around it, pouring into the chambers. Benjamin was close. The jetpack was working. Benjamin thought of his father again. He thought about how proud the big square would be of what he'd accomplished.
So, going back to it here, Sarah believes in Benjamin with all her being and hopes he will share with her whatever spoils the fountain brings. Benjamin thinks of his father again, hoping he would be proud of his son for making it so far. So like you said, his father never shows up again, and we never really know what he thinks of him. It would have been nice if even there was like a final cutscene or something to go back to his dad, because really starting from the beginning of this, I thought it was going to be some Icarus allegory. Did you think that?
Oh yeah, Icarus flying too close to the sun.
Yeah, like he's literally flying. That his dad made him a contraption, and then I mean, obviously he does have like a downfall. So I guess it kind of is, but it
is. Could this also be seen as a reference to Nintendo and Kid Icarus? They're flying too close to the sun. Their parent may not like them.
I would assume Kid Icarus. I've never played a Kid Icarus, but I assume it follows a similar story of the myth. Is that the whole thing? Is like Pit trying to fight his parent or something?
No, I was just trying to make a joke. I just said like a little joke about how Sakurai doesn't like or doesn't want to make another Kid Icarus game.
Okay.
And Nintendo in general doesn't want to make another. Like every I tend to watch a lot of digital gaming videos, and a lot of I've seen plenty of videos talking about Kid Icarus and rumored updates.
Yeah, it is kind of the black sheep of the Nintendo pantheon. What was the last one? Dark Mirror? Dark Fate? Dark of the Moon?
I want to say Dark Alliance, but that's a Baldur's Gate game.
And the others were a Transformers sequel and a Terminator sequel. Yeah. So who the fuck knows?
Going back to the topic of Thomas of this expansion update. Yeah, it's described as a big thank you to everyone who believed in the game.
Yeah. Yeah. So like for that, it can't be faulted. it's a nice thing to get a little more out of it.
And yeah, Benjamin's flight takes place before the events of Thomas is Alone and tells the story of the first AI to discover something very dangerous. Hope.
Ooh. Oh, it says Hope?
Yeah.
That's good. That's good. It's true.
Can I tell you the funny thing about this?
Yeah.
I'm reading this on PCGamesN.com. Mm-hmm. From specifically from June 2014. You'll never guess what the beginning of the closing sentences.
Is it something Icarus related?
Thomas was alone is 60% off in the Steam summer sale. You know, pennies. Do you think you'll play it again? And I just love that it's that even almost 10 years ago, it's still it's barely anything.
Yeah.
Like this, and yeah, it's I really like how there's a constant of, and this is a good example of a game that is constantly on sale, and people associate things that are constantly sold for like on sale as having a bad indication to it.
Mm-hmm. But this is one of those gems. This is like a bargain bin gem. I mean, I was going to mention it, but then by the time this goes out, the sale will most likely be over. But currently, when we're recording this, like a week before you hear it, it's $2 on the eShop. Like, it's so cheap still. And I mean, there's probably a Steam sale going on right now where it might be cheap. I don't know. But it's always cheap. That's why I really wanted to start with this, because chances are everybody owns it. It was on PS Plus very close to launch, or very close to the beginning of PS Plus.
It's it's for those who have PlayStation Plus Extra, it's included in that.
Right. So. Yeah, I always forget how those tiers work, but it is.
By the time this goes up, it'll still be available for $1.99 on eShop, because the sale ends on New Year's Day.
Sick.
So, yeah.
Well, hey, if you followed along with us or not, here you are. And if you have a Switch, go for it, because it would be a good Switch game. It's such a short little thing.
I really want to find a physical version.
Oh, did they
limited? There's a limited run version of the PS4 release.
Oh, I usually don't care about those kinds of things, but I would.
We're gonna be talking about this game during Game of the Year.
Yeah. Oh man, it says it's sold out. That sucks. It's probably been sold out for a long time, but that's awesome.
Were you also looking at DQ deals?
No, I was looking at now it's on Amazon. It says used, but oh no, for new, you can get this physical on Amazon for $39, which I don't think is terrible.
I found it for like $27 or $24.99.
Really?
Yeah, like I'm very tempted to pick this up. this game has like one of our chats when I finished the game, I was just like, I'm done. I just finished it. It's finished Benjamin's Flight. And I don't know how I feel right now.
Yeah.
Like the only way I can describe it is like I'm just like sunk back in my chair, and my body is numb. My mind is just like the portable DVD player menu where it's just the shapes bouncing into the corner, like just changing shape, changing colors and all that.
But it's the Thomas Was Alone shapes.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I mean, I think it's a good, like, again, I don't usually care to get physical versions of digital games, but you look at the world we're in right now where things are getting delisted all the time. Like, I even went the other day. I know that you can't. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I just want to say that while we're recording this, Watchmen got removed from HBO Max.
Really?
Yeah.
I gotta watch that. My dad has that, but I've never seen it.
It's really good.
I purchased the I have the graphic novel that I've yet to read, but
oh, it's a completely it's faithful to the story, but it's its own thing.
Okay. Speaking of graphic novels, I started reading the first Life is Strange one the other night.
Nice. Was that the one? Is that the physical version or
yeah,
the one?
Yeah.
Keep in mind, I did gift you and Emmett the digital version because I'm just gonna push this on them, on both of them, and there's already like there's a new comic starting.
Well, I didn't know there were six of these, or maybe there's more.
Six volumes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I have the triple pack. I only have the first three volumes.
So, yeah, there's six volumes. The sixth volume, and I'm sorry, listeners, that we're going on a Life is Strange tangent. But if I see the chance to go on a Life is Strange tangent, I'm jumping in.
Gotta start with Lost Records.
Yeah, no, we'll save that for the Game Awards for Real podcast. Alex appears like she shows up at the very end of the Life is Strange, the first series of comics.
Okay.
And the one that's like she's gonna be the next run is gonna be stuff with her and Steph.
Oh. And it's just like a what if about the rest of that game.
Yeah, because I don't know actually because the Life is Strange comic that like the comic that you're reading is technically a what if, but Don't Nod have said that.
Oh, is this canon now?
Well, there's actually they have the opposite of like they have like two they're like two ocean like two options of what like there's like two timelines.
Okay.
Like the Bay and Bay.
Because the butterfly effect, there's like multiverses.
Yes, like, and the first like the first few issues are very much like showing that Max can like it's basically Max like falling into different different timelines.
Yeah, I'm noticing that.
And there's a lot of, like the beginning, like the first arc is going back to Arcadia Bay.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going back to Arcadia Bay, and it's actually a really interesting, really cool way of portraying Max's powers or abilities that works, but like it can work, like works even better in comic book format.
Huh.
But the like it's she's switching from the Arcadia Bay, like save the Arcadia Bay version
mm-hmm.
of the events. And then, like, to the, like, because the game, or not the game, the comic series is mainly based in the Save Chloe timeline.
Right.
And it's just, like...
But you're saying that this, they bounce between the two?
They're playing, it's the whole thing of ping pong. Like, just...
Oh, wow. See, that's cool to me, and, like, I... True Colors... Not to keep going, but I feel like the black sheep of Life is Strange is season two, and people don't talk about the fact that there were so many weird little endings to that one that it's just as butterfly effecty. But True Colors didn't really have multiple endings. It was more like what
they're described to you.
Yeah, like there was a narrative. It wrapped up the same way pretty much for everybody. And it was more like the relationships that you made with the people that mattered. It wasn't really like, choose your fate here. The first two had.
When Player One versus the World started.
Another great podcast you should go listen to.
And then that was one of his big gripes. Like, that's one of his gripes from watching the episode about life, True Colors. Like, they have all, like, Donut had all these different scenarios planned for all these different, like, variations.
Mm-hmm.
And Deck Nine only has...
Oh, it was made by a different company.
Yeah, Deck Nine made Before the Storm. So it's... Yeah, because like when Don't Nod, when they split from, or when they, after like a certain point, like when they became independent again, or when they maintained, like made themselves certifiably independent, Square Enix held on to the rights to Life is Strange, which is why Deck Nine is now the home, like they're down, they're like the. They're the new caretaker of the IP.
Mm-hmm. But they don't care as much about... I mean, they're big on story, but not as much about the whole...
No, they are...
...choice stuff.
I mean, I haven't played... Like, I've not gotten a chance to play the Deck Nine Expanse game that they did for Telltale.
Oh, right. Yeah, me neither. So maybe I'll hold my tongue on that.
Yeah, because it looks really good, like, and it's kind of weird seeing that the company that was known, like, that's known for, or that has the big association with episodic narrative stories, is working worked with a company that also. Associated with episodic narrative stories. So.
Yeah. And tell me why it had different endings, right?
Yeah. Oh God. That is the one game that Forget Thomas Was Alone. That is no, I'm seriously. Every day I wake up, I think, it's today the day I tweet at Don't Nod to say, please make a physical version of Tell Me Why.
Yeah, because I mean, to go back to that initial point, like, everything's getting delisted. It would be nice to just have these games to know that you'll have them forever. And I mean, I would happily have a Thomas Was Alone and just keep it like packaged or whatever and only break it open if the world ends, but at least I have it, like this game that really built what I love about indie games. And Tell Me Why would be another one. Like I had said, I think it would be a really cool physical, like, collector's edition. But alas, go and listen to all of the, well, listen, listen to Player One versus the World and go play all of these Don't Nod games. We may play one. I've been thinking about
There is a certain LP that was never done for the channel.
Oh, are you hinting at me?
Yeah.
I have it all banked.
Oh, you do?
I did it. I played True Colors.
Okay.
I have all the footage. I've never edited it because everything else got the better of me, but I've got it, and I'm
okay. I didn't know that. I legitimately thought you just didn't have the time to do it.
No. I even recorded it as my first, like, that's my first run through. Everything's genuine. Like, It's all there. I just gotta get to editing it. I've been thinking about doing it again lately because unemployment was good to me, and I have had time to edit my backlog of things. Pretty much everything but a couple In Memoriams and True Colors. That's all I have left to edit now. So I will get to it soon, and you will find it on the channel. Merry Christmas. You'll find it next year. But yeah, with IBC, I might like to do the first season again. Give me an excuse to get that Storm edition or whatever it's called. That remaster.
You might want to just stick with
the OG.
Yeah. I'm not going to try to talk you out of it, getting the upgraded version, because that comment of, like, that joke comment about now you can see everyone crying 4K is actually kind of necessary. So, yeah.
Well, I thought it was just bad on the Switch version, but if it's bad everywhere...
Well, it's not bad everywhere, it's just there are certain bugs.
Okay. Well, I'll think about it. Maybe we'll just go and play the OG, but if you haven't played it and are interested, Alan played the first season on our YouTube channel a long time ago, Emmett played Before the Storm, and I played season 2. And soon, True Colors will be up there as well. So please go subscribe to our YouTube channel. And yeah, I'm happy that we found...
And subscribe to Player One versus the World, because yeah. I deeply respect Adnan.
Yeah, he's killing it. He's got some great... the fact that he can get these guests on blows my mind. I just like to think that they're all just sitting there waiting for somebody to interview them. But it's really, really cool. Very cool show. But what's not cool is how Benjamin's flight ends. So let's get back to it and see what goes on.
Benjamin was blind. He had seen shadows, bright lights, data in innumerable and unimaginable combinations. And then it had gone. He wasn't ready. He sat. There was nothing else to do. He'd try and find his way home tomorrow.
So Benjamin thinks of his father, hoping he would be proud of his son for making it so far. Sarah stays behind as Benjamin jumps into the fountain. As it was for Thomas when he found this... Oh, I said creation matrix, but I don't think that's what it was. It was the fountain. He describes it as beautiful, and it floods him with light and knowledge. But he is left blind, in a maze, wandering forever, never to return home again. We end with Sarah, left behind. Quote, the fountain had destroyed everything. It had unleashed the clouds. It had blinded Benjamin. Physically and metaphorically. God, I wrote like a novel here. She vows to get back there again, this time, knowing what it can do. And that brings me to kind of my biggest gripe about Benjamin's flight is I don't think that Sarah had enough hesitation in the base game about jumping into the Matrix at the end. Like, and I what I did before we recorded this was I was going through a video of the base game, trying to see what...
Comparisons.
Yeah, and like in those final levels of, I forget off the top of my head, the chapter where Thomas and his friends sacrifice themselves at the end. There's a couple levels where it goes to like, it bounces between each character. Oh, this person's thinking this, this person thought this. And I don't know if we ever see, from what I saw, we don't really talk to Sarah. We don't hear her thoughts. And I think that's weird because she's the only one who knows what's going on. Like, she kind of gets it and knows what it's like to, I don't know, lose your friends like this whole thing, and this goes to the YouTube comments I was talking about, where people are like, oh, well, now it makes sense why she's all cynical. And I do get that, but I think that people are giving it too much credit for what Sarah is in the main game. And I just think it could have been done a lot better if she was a different character. And
it would actually work better if these were all like everyone was like an OC, like original character.
Yeah.
Because there'd be less things to worry about in terms of connecting it to the main fabric of the base game.
Right. Either make it its own thing or put a lot more effort into connecting it. Because what you have here is this disconnect.
Yeah, and it's a bit of a plot hole.
Yeah. That kind of leaves you like, oh, all right. And like, I feel for Benjamin. It's extremely freaking sad.
Like, yeah, it's a cautionary tale.
It is. It is. But I think that in a way, I don't want to say character assassinated Sarah, but I mean, you came out of it not liking her as much, whereas you thought she was great in the first game, in the main game. Am I right there?
Yeah, I kind of felt like if this was an original character, like someone like a different character with different personality, I'd have different thoughts.
Yeah. But this kind of toyed with what you knew about her. You're like, oh man, a character I know. And then it's just like, oh, all right. Like, imagine playing Thomas Was Alone right after this now. Taking that, doing the prequels before the original trilogy. and just jumping into Thomas now. You would eventually meet Sarah, and she just wouldn't seem the same. I just don't think you'd have as much of enthusiasm for her story when there's a weird disconnect, like I said. So, yeah, that's where we're left. So, I mean, I guess all in all, underwhelming ? Or what do you think?
Considering that this was a free update, the impetus being thanking the players for like thanking the customers for buying and like loving the game.
Mm-hmm.
And that PC games and article I referenced, like Bethel will be, it says this, I'm just going to read about it. What, Jeremy Peel wrote back in 2014.
Mm-hmm.
Bethel will be implementing, or Steam copies of Thomas Was Alone have already updated, all except Linux. Bethel will be implementing a fix for that just as soon as he gets back from the dentist. If that doesn't say everything, if that doesn't say what you need to know about the scale that the game is made in, it just says everything that. This is an indie game can get.
I was just gonna say, it's as indie as they come. Yeah, that's what a beautiful piece of text. We gotta memorialize that. I hope they like frame that on the wall at Bethel.
Well, the tweet got deleted. So.
Oh.
Maybe if you use the Wayback Machine to try to archive it. So if you want, I can drop the link in.
Yeah. Yeah, that's brilliant. I'll tweet that at him or something. No, it really is. Like, it's such a, I mean, the celebration we've been having here for Thomas Was Alone is that it's such a simple thing, a unique premise built on something so minimalist, basic, short, barely any, like, not a big thing put into narration, the story, the music. It's so simple across the board, but it really has stuck with me for a decade now. And I mean, affected you enough to make it, we're going to talk about in Game of the Year. It's become your favorite thing that you would put in your what took me so long. Like it's I'm very happy that it has changed you in a way and made you see
so
another awesome indie.
And there's a reason I was actually originally gonna just say after we finished recording, I was gonna go, hey, the Life is Strange stuff should be a good, like, it'd be a good thing to put as like a banter video. But it's funny that, but because like Life is Strange, like the first Life is Strange and Thomas Was Alone were equal things, like of Life is Strange 1 back in 2015 when it came out. I got it every time it went on sale on various platforms. Because NN would just go, just post about how great it was. And I thought, I'll eventually do that one day. I'll eventually check it out one day. And I, like, just get it now and just play it sometime down the line. And when I eventually did play it in 2019,
changed your life.
Changed it. Because I played it, like, I played through all five episodes within a week. I literally started the, like, finished episode one right before we were recording a LHG podcast. And
then you probably just exploded into talking about it on the podcast.
Yeah, because I was... Like, that's, from that point on, I was, like, fully into walking sims.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we started eating them up. I was going to say I was very happy that I got to experience that alongside you, because I hadn't played it until you started talking about how great it was. But I'm happy that I knew you at the time that you started falling in love with Life is Strange. But, yeah, we were playing Edith Finch. We were playing... what else do we do? Did we play, did you play Everybody's Gone to the Rapture?
I have that one. Like, I have that in my Steam library, but I've yet to play it because, like, there's certain games I've had to put, like, I've had to push into 2024, like, from my backlog.
Okay.
But I kind of just, like, with Life is Strange and Thomas Was Alone, I just took it all in. Like, if there was a camera, look, like, just if my webcam was on and I was showcase, like, just recording my face, like, just playing the game, I'd just be stone faced. But if there was like a monitor or something tracking different emotional, like, different rates, like,
oh, like your heart rate monitor,
just stuff like that, then there'd be more of a reaction on that rather than a face reaction. And as I mentioned, when I finished every, like, first half of Thomas Was Alone, I was like, I need to get back to it. Then when I finished it, I was like, well, I don't even know what to do now. And this is not me trying to make a joke. I felt blinded after I finished Benjamin's Flight. I exited the game, turned my controller off, and just, like, as I said, sank back into my chair, just mentally exhausted, mentally done, but in a good way.
Like, the emotional journey was over.
Yeah, because I was actually going to ask, like, I was gonna like just say, hey, why? Are you sure it was like it's? Are you sure it's only like 9 chapters? Because I see a 10th one, and because I'd see Wario 64 and all those, and those, like, I see that account post, like, I see Wario 64 just post that Thomas Was Alone is like 199 so many times.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things. I kind of am glad I'm autistic because I have intense tunnel vision.
Just narrowed in on it.
Not just narrowed in, like, if tunnel vision in terms of I'd see it and not even make a note of it.
Oh, okay.
It's why I was able to play certain games, like it's why certain games that have been infamously spoiled, I didn't see it. Like, if I did see it, I did make a mental note of it.
That's good, because you're frequently spoiled by thumbnails.
Yeah.
And recommendations and stuff. So you're saying that you kind of, it never really processed with you what this game was, but you're happy that you took the time to kind of stop and take a chance on it.
Yeah, this is like, and I'm going to make this case for like during Game of the Year. Thomas Was Alone is the perfect game to win the award of What Took Me So Long. Or at least it's the perfect What Took Me So Long. It's the perfect game to fit in the category of What Took So Long.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm literally kicking myself at why I didn't play the game sooner.
Well, to be completely honest with you, that is the point of Indie Book Club. Like, that's why I wanted to do this, because I want to expose everyone to these games that you're probably not playing, or at the very least you've put off for so long. Like, I was scrolling through my thing the other day and I was like, there's so many of these, like, I want to get to. I've been playing quite a lot of games recently, and it's been lovely to really play a lot of the indies of this year and, like, just take them all in. But I know that there are ones that I missed out on. One infamously that I'm kicking myself and a nudist would kill me is Night in the Woods. And I keep seeing
Connor would harass you for if he knew that you didn't play the game, because when I was, like, back when things were better in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I put in one of the chat, like, in the chat, like, hey, would it be a good idea to play Night in the Woods? And Connor goes, like, in multiple, like, all caps, play that game. That game is amazing. It got me into coding. So, yeah, that.
Well, I'm definitely, I put it on the list, and I thought about you, because I was like, chances are you're going to play a lot of these with me. And, I know that Night in the Woods is heavy. It deals with a lot of heavy shit. I mean, behind the scenes, it's heavy as well. But I think it's one of those important ones. And I am very excited to finally experience that. Same with Celeste. I think it's heavy. It's hard to confront sometimes. But it's a very special game. And I hope that we have these opportunities in the future to talk about them and to come back here and explore the space with everyone. So,
and I just want to say that when you do the eventual one on Edith Finch, make sure to, like, because I don't know if I'll be on that one, because I've played the game, I think, 3 times now. And
then we need you on it.
Make sure to, like, if anything, just Thomas, not Thomas Was Alone, that shows where my mind is at right now. Edith Finch, or even before Edith Finch, do the unfinished Swan.
The Unfinished Swan is on the list.
Yeah, because that
is one I've never played, and I need to.
It's part of the Edith Finch universe.
And the Annapurna universe, which I just I need to play all of those.
No, I mean like plot wise.
Oh yes, because one of the characters
is heavily implied and is even mentioned, even confirmed as
to be the artist.
Yeah. Like to be the the antagonist of the Unfinished Swan.
Up in the treehouse, right? Or the castle.
Yeah.
Yeah. God, minor spoilers there, but ooh, stick around.
No, it's not spoilers because you have to know a lot of information about the Edith Finch plot.
True.
Which when it even gets that character, you're very deep in the game. So
yeah. And Edith Finch is one of those games that's like, I mean, all walking simulators are great for it, but Edith Finch is one of those go in blind games and it will change you.
Like, yeah, that's why I watched that Joseph Anderson video essay. Cause I was like, I didn't see anyone who made, like, none of the people I follow made any videos on it. And I found that one and I was like, yes, this is a great video to sell people on the game too.
Oh, nice. Well, one I definitely I'll stop after this, but one that I think will emotionally invest you as much as it saddens you is Gone Home.
I've already played Gone Home.
You have played it?
Scared the crap out of me.
Really? Did you finish it?
Yeah.
Did you like it?
I finished the game, but I didn't really
take it all in.
Not that. I just, it was right at the start, like at the start of me getting into Walking Sims.
Okay.
And
so maybe that kind of format didn't resonate with you enough to really keep you engaged.
Not quite. Okay, I'm clearly crazy because I'm pretty sure. Okay. Oh no, I had made a VG plays of. I was trying to do like a VG plays of Gone Home. Like this was right after I finished Edith Finch.
Okay.
And it turns out I jettisoned the file, but I didn't really take it in. It was the first game that I played from that developer, and yeah, I just didn't really, it didn't really click with me.
Okay. Well, go ahead.
I am probably gonna try to get to Tacoma at some point.
Tacoma is on my list for IBC.
Is Virginia?
Virginia's on the list.
Okay, that game we have an LP of that game by me on the channel.
Virginia is one that I think I've said before. I've played it. It didn't resonate with me, and so I really want to play it again because I know it like. I hate to use the word touched, but like it was, it resonated with you and Emmett, and I didn't get that same feeling. So I definitely want to do that. I know that, as I've said, Kentucky Route Zero, I'd love to do, it's just long.
That game is so weird. It's so good.
It's
the fact that it's oddness is like runs parallel with the narrative of it being like very out there type of game, like a very out there experience.
Mm. I did play, I played a couple chapters of it when it was on Game Pass, and then it left. But I did realize it's on Netflix.
That still feels weird to hear.
Right?
Yeah, the games are on Netflix.
But I've played a couple games on Netflix, and it's fine. Like, it's great. It's super weird how it works, because you have to have Netflix to do it, but you then download the games separately. Like, you don't really play them through the Netflix app. But
let's say, because, like, once you're playing, it just gets canceled halfway through, and you just have to deal with it.
Yeah, because
and give Netflix more dollars. give Papa Netflix his money.
You're not on the right IP address. You're pulled from playing Spiritfarer.
No, it's just that we don't want to see it. We don't want to pay to keep it going.
Right.
Well, we're gonna make a mint off residuals.
One of the games I played on Netflix this year, I really enjoyed. And I don't know if we can talk about it in Game of the Year, so I didn't. But I'll just say, I enjoyed it quite a bit.
Okay, tell me when we're done recording, because I need to know.
But yeah, check out the Netflix games. And yeah, I mean, we talked Thomas was alone to death. Thank you.
I think the fact that we kept breaking the tangents, kind of like nothing against like the game, but showed that there really wasn't much to talk about in terms of like from a narrative point of view, because it feels like just exactly what it is, like a thank you, like acknowledging the people who bought it, who loved it, and just giving them like some extra stuff to to do.
Yeah, and I'm fine with that. I mean, like I said, I expected this to be a shorter one because, I mean, we really went over. I loved the first two episodes. If you haven't listened to them, please do. I think we had a really engaging conversation about it in a similar way to what I was hoping to get out of this podcast and hope to in the future. This one was great because it not only took us on tangents about indie games, but it just kind of it showed what a game like this could inspire. And even if it's just like the storytelling aspect of it, like all of these really great games that we have played and enjoy and would want to experience again because of their stories. Like you look at pioneers like Thomas and you think, well, I'm thankful that they exist. So definitely go pick up Thomas Was Alone. Currently it's $2 and, listen to the podcast. Please share this podcast around. I mean, we don't say it a lot on podcasts in general, but I've been thinking about it lately. Like, please share word of mouth. Rate us on whatever platforms you use, the Spotify's, the iTunes, whatever. 5-star us. It gets the word out there somehow. And I'm trying to put the videos up as they go. I still have the episode 2 video, but by now when you're hearing this, it should be up on the YouTube. You can check it out for video purposes, because I've put some of the I've put the gameplay, some of the gameplay in for the levels that we talk about, so it kind of works as like a little side podcast. So yeah, check those out. Subscribe to our YouTube channel and our podcast feed. Alan, thank you for joining me on this journey.
No problem. This game has legitimately changed me. and how I feel like, just to close it off, this is simply a game about shapes and how they traverse the world, their environment around them. And that concept alone changed me.
Yeah. I'm very, very happy that it impacted you. Like, that really makes me very emotional, because I'm just, this is what I want to do. This is what we're here to do, is to share these things with not just the listeners, but my coworkers, my friends, the people that I want to play these games. And I'm very thankful that I've been given the chance to make this podcast, because it's something I've really wanted to do for a long time. So, yeah, thank you for listening. and enjoy the rest of the VGU, the 12 days of VGU miss, or whatever we're calling it at this point. I guess just 12 days of VGU.
Correct. That is it. And I wonder what game will be talked about next.
Actually, the one that you just sent me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I kind of lined it up because there's one indie that I'm not going to get to this year for Game of the Year talks, because it's a sequel to a game that I love and I believe you love, and I wanted to play the first one again. So our next game, which I will start, we're gonna put this podcast to bed for, well, I guess, I mean, it's almost the end of the year anyway, but Game of the Year podcasts are going to be recording soon by the time you're hearing this and getting put out there. And once that's all done, probably February-ish, we will be playing Oxenfree, which is a game by Night School.
I'm pretty sure.
Because Night Dive makes remakes.
System Shock.
And Night School makes Oxenfree and After Party, which is one of my favorite games, and I also want to play it on here. But Oxenfree is a great game. It is possibly available on Netflix. The second one will be, which we're also going to play after it, but Oxenfree 1 is, I think, in various places. It may have been a PS Plus game. I'm pretty sure it was a gold game on Xbox. It's definitely cheap places. There's a Steam sale going on. So gear up for it. And in February, we'll start getting to it. But yeah, please share. Follow our Twitter as well. I'm sorry. I should know it. It's VGU. I think it's at VGU IBC. But at IBC VGU. That's what it is. So follow us there for updates and whatnot. And yeah, thank you so much. And we will see you soon. Let's get back to the game.